Welcome
Thank you.
everyone for today's Accessibility Advisory Committee meeting today on May 3rd, 2021. To begin with, please know that this meeting is being recorded. As usual, the meeting audio will be placed on WMATA.com website. Just a few helpful tips for people joining via phone call. You can press *6 to mute and or unmute yourself. If you'd like to make some comments, you can raise or lower hands, your virtual hands, by pressing *9. Everyone joining through the video conference, you can click on the speaker icon to mute and or unmute yourself. You can click on the hand icon, the reactions to raise or lower your virtual hands. Please keep yourself on mute unless speaking. This helps eliminate external noise. All the participants are on mute at this time, and as I described, you can unmute yourself when needed. We have interpreters with us on this call. Therefore, when speaking, please state your name first and then your comment. This helps them do their job well. It helps everyone on the phone calls knowing who is the speaker, as well as anyone listening to the meeting audio afterwards. At this point, I would go ahead and take a roll call of the committee members. So please confirm your presence. Elver Ariza Silva. Darnese Bush. Tino Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles.
Present.
Thank you. Rico Dancy.
Present.
Thank you. Deborah Fisher.
Present.
Thank you. Melanie Jackson. Steve Kaplan. Thank you. Mary Kay McMahon.
Present.
Thank you. Philippa Mazzell.
Here.
Thank you. Anthony Oberg. Phil Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray. Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semaford.
Present.
Thank you. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simona. Okay. That concludes the roster call for today's AAC meeting. At this point, I would go ahead and read today's meeting agenda for the record. I would share my screen to show the agenda to everyone who can't see it, and I will be reading it out loud. So bear with me for a quick moment. Thank you. I'm hoping everyone who can see can view my screen at this point. We just completed the call to order and introductions of the committee members by taking the roll call. At 5:35, we have approval of agenda and approval of prior meeting minutes, as well as the board report. At 5:40, we will have a presentation by Mr. Jim Hamry. The presentation is about Metro bus routes changes coming up in June. At 6:05, we will have elevator and escalator team giving us a presentation about the new escalators. At 6:25, we will have a session for open discussion, if any, by the committee. At 6:45, public comments. 7 p.m., bus and rail subcommittee report, 7:15, Metro Access subcommittee report, and the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 7:30 p.m. At this point, I will stop sharing my screen. Anyone looking to make public comments, please do let us know by sending a message in the chat, and I can put your name on the list. Any presenters giving us information about different topics? We're getting some external noise, so give me just a quick moment. Thank you. Any presenters who would be giving us presentations, if you have any slide deck, I would request for you to please describe your slides, information on the slides, any pictures on the slides for our members who may be blind or have low vision. This will help them knowing what are you showing on your slides. If you're just describing the information without any slides, obviously that's perfectly fine. But if you have any slides, we do request for you to please describe your slides and the information on the slides. At this point, Chair Posner, I would ask for you to move forward. You have the floor.
Thank you very much. We'll start out with an approval of the agenda. But before we do that, I'd like to make a request of Mr. Hamry when he does his presentation on the bus route changes. And it would be very useful, instead of just giving us the bus route numbers, you actually told us what the starting point and ending point on each of those routes is, so we have an idea geographically, and also tell us whether it's an increase in service or a decrease in service. And thirdly, ask if there will be a parallel service set up by jurisdictions or some other route that will add to the increase in service or reduce the decrease in service. So in addition to your presentation, which is always very good, I think in order to follow, it would be really nice to know where the bus routes actually go, and also whether it's a net increase or a net decrease. And that would be super. And so at this point, I'm going to ask for an approval of the agenda. And if anybody would require a change in the agenda or disapproval of the agenda, please raise your hand.
I move that we approve the agenda.
Second.
Having heard no objections, I will accept the agenda as being approved. So we will go with the current agenda, starting with Mr. Hamry, moving to the escalators, and then the open discussion. I'll now ask that we approve the prior meeting minutes, and hopefully everyone has had an opportunity to read them. And if there are no objections to the prior minutes, I will accept them as written with unanimous approval. Any objections?
So moved.
Thank you so much. And now the board report, which hopefully you've all had a chance to read, and understand that it is a draft. And before the next board meeting, we will have a bus rail committee meeting, we will have a metro access meeting, and we will also have this meeting. So I will make modifications to that draft based upon discussions that we have at those three meetings. And currently, if there are no objections, I will take unanimous approval of the draft with the understanding that it will be revised and updated, and any suggestions for updates will be welcome, and any changes I make will be circulated to the entire committee so everyone knows what's happening. When I do the oral report to the board, you are all welcome to see it on YouTube. which you can do for any of the previous reports. They're all currently posted, and you can watch Mr. Sheehan do a magnificent job covering for me last Thursday when I had to go in for a minor procedure. So hearing no objections, we will say that is approved. And if Mr. Hamry is in the room, please, Jim, go ahead and give your great report. Thank you.
Chair Posner, this is Anu. At this point, I do not see Mr. Hamry has joined.
I'm here.
You are?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I see him. He's okay. Trying to hide out behind that beard, but he can't hide for long.
Thank you, Mr. Hamry.
I was actually scrambling around trying to put together all the materials you just asked for.
Oh, come on. You've got that right on the tip of the tongue. You really know this stuff.
Well, but yeah. So I believe I had sent to Anu earlier a copy of the service change memos. And that is the document that we prepare to highlight all of the changes that are going on. As we get ready for our next service change, which will go into effect on June 6th, which is a Sunday, and we always do Sundays whenever we can. We're part of the next step of, or the first step of the recovery. So if you'll recall last year, Metro laid out four phases of COVID. One was the crisis response, and then we sort of worked on stabilizing the service, and now we're working on recovery, and then we'll get into the post-COVID era, hopefully, you know, within a year. So this is our first step, and what we're trying to do with this schedule is to enhance the span of service, to expand the coverage of service, and to increase the capacity so that we're able to serve the riders who are willing to take public transit now and over the course of the summer. There are additional plans working through for what happens in the fall. But for now, we're just trying to put our blinders on and make sure we can get appropriate service coverage for the summer. The good news is that our ridership on Metrobus has increased almost 50% since January 3rd, when we restored fare collection and use of the front door for boarding and alighting of our buses. And with that kind of a rapid trajectory, it doesn't take much to get behind. I'm anticipating, and this is my personal vision, not a official Metro view, is that we're just brushing on 200,000 riders a day now, weekdays. And I expect by the end of summer, we'll probably be around 300,000. And so we've built this schedule to be able to serve that range of activity. Probably the highlight, and certainly the one that will capture most headlines, is that on, I believe it's 36 routes on 34 lines, we will be extending service to 2 a.m. weekdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. These services are distributed around the region. About half are in the district, but the major lines in Maryland and Virginia also get the treatment. And the intent is to be able to support the restoration of the entertainment economy and the late night workforce as part of our continuing effort to ensure that we're meeting the travel requirements of essential workers, of individuals who are reliant on, you know, our dominant industries of tourism, travel, education, and government. And so in the district, the Pennsylvania Avenue lines, the 32 and Dix routes, the Wisconsin Avenue line, the 33 route, the 14th Street line, the Georgia Avenue line, the North Capitol line, the number 80, the ML King, the A6 and A8 routes, the Rhode Island Avenue, Avondale, G8, the H4, which is Brooklyn across to Tenleytown, the Connecticut Avenue line, the P6 route, which runs the section that will run till 2 in the morning, is from downtown out to Anacostia through Southwest, the 16th Street lines, the U5 and U6, which run through a number of neighborhoods in the vicinity of Minnesota Avenue Metro Rail Station, the V2, which is a line that begins up in Lincoln Heights and runs down to Anacostia along Minnesota Avenue, the W2, which is a circulator around the Ward 8 from Anacostia up into the Heights and back again, the W4, which is the major line across upper Ward 7 and 8, which is Alabama Avenue and transitions to Benning Road and ends up over at Deanwood. And then the good old X2, the H line, the H Street, Northeast, Northwest line. We're also restoring services in Mid-City on the 60 and 62, which are Fort Totten to Petworth and Tacoma to Petworth, to ensure that people have easy access to the Green Line. And also Saturday service on the W3, which is the route that goes from Anacostia up to the United Medical Center in the far south corner of the city. We're doing a number of running time adjustments to make sure that we're providing reliable service and making some administrative adjustments where, if you remember, a few months ago, the board adopted some new service criteria. In that criteria defined how we define lines of service. So the 60-64 line, which is currently combined, is split to create two new lines. The A2 will be split off. The W5 will become a line by itself. And the M4, which is the service that goes from Sibley Hospital up to Friendship Heights. It goes to Tenleytown. Is being extended to get up to the Knollwood retirement community that are some of our more strident supporters of Metrobus and the E6. We're not bringing back the E6 exactly, but we are trying to get bus service up to that community by extending the M4. In Maryland, we're doing extensions to 2 a.m. on the A12, which runs from Addison Road out across the Beltway. And it runs on so many different roads, I can't think of how to describe that, but it's sort of south of Central Avenue. The C4, which is a major line running along University Boulevard and Randolph from Prince George's Plaza all the way across to Twin Brook. The F4, which goes from New Carrollton to Silver Spring. The J2, which goes from Silver Spring up to Bethesda. The P12, which goes all the way from Easton through Southern Avenue Metro and across to Addison Road along the Silver Hill and other Addison Road in Prince George's, the T18, which is the Annapolis Road line, Y2, which is the Georgia Avenue line in Maryland, and the Z8, which is the Colesville Road line running from Silver Spring Transit Center out to Colesville. Those will be going till 2 a.m. 7 days a week. We are restoring the route C29, which is one of the Central Avenue routes. We'll resume that Saturday service, and that'll provide connections to Bowie State University. We're also going to be making some route adjustments to respond to construction projects. Prince George's Plaza is going to be part of the summer platform improvement project, and so there'll be some rerouting, relocating of bus stops there. We're real happy to say that D13 and D14, which are the Oxon Hill Suitland line, they've been on detour because of the Wilson Bridge Road bridge construction. Say that three times real fast. And that project is ending, so we'll be back on normal routes. Mm-hmm. And we're extending the route C26 from Largo out to the Bowie Park and Ride via Pointer Ridge and the Bowie Health Center. This covers some of the services previously covered by B29 and C28 to get service into the suburban communities of Central Prince George's. And then Virginia, the services that get to go to 2 a.m. will be the Arlington Boulevard line, the Pentagon Lincolnia line, the 7, the 10A, which runs from Pentagon all the way down to Huntington through Old Town Alexandria, the Columbia Pike line, the Crystal City to Tyson's line, the 23, the Leesburg Pike line, the 28 line, and the 38B running from Ballston into Farragut Square. In Virginia, we're adding some additional routes to provide more coverage in Orange Hunt, which is sort of outside the Beltway over toward Burke. Additional service in the corridor of the 23 line from Crystal City all the way to McLean and Tyson's Corner. The 26A will be restored, which runs from Annandale, like the community college, across to East Falls Church. And the 28F, which is a connector between Skyline City and the Pentagon. We're bringing back a new variation of the 11 line running from Mount Vernon all the way down at the southern portion of our service area up to Braddock Road Metro to provide connectivity for the commuters in that corridor, as well as additional service through Old Town Alexandria. But unlike the 11Y that it replaces, it won't go all the way into downtown. We'll provide a transfer to Metrorail. We're combining the 17H and 17K, the Kings Park Express, into a single route so that we can combine those ridership. And in Alexandria West End, we're combining the 21 line and the 8 line to make one 21C, which will provide connectivity to the Pentagon from the Fox Chase area and the Duke Street corridor out to Van Dorn Street. Sort of that inner area. And then we're returning the 22F and extending it to serve, provide additional service into Skyline City to match the 28F that we were restoring. We do have 5 lines that are being transferred to Fairfax Connector. That transfer will take place in July. 4 of the lines are currently not operating. The one that is the Annandale Road line that goes from East Falls Church down to Annandale, the 3A. And that our last day of operation will be July 9, and then the connector will pick that up on July 10. And so those are some of the service-related highlights. I do want to mention that there is, as everyone knows, a summer shuttle happening. And part of what we're preparing for is making sure that all of the shuttle routes will be on the treated the same. They'll have schedules and you'll be able to look them up on Bus ETA for arrival information. And there is one good news. King Street Station, that construction project that has been going on for a really long time, is slated to open the first phase on June 6th. And so we'll be coordinating that move from the temporary stops out to the, that are out on diagonal to the closer in stops. And hopefully we'll be in that configuration for about a year as the city finishes the rest of the project, and then everything will be finished. And I think those are all the operating and facility highlights that I have to talk about tonight. So I'm happy to take any questions.
Jim, thank you. And I'll ask you on the shuttles, and I'm sure you will, that you will have the appropriate number of wheelchair accessible shuttles available, and also appropriate signage for the low vision community and for the cognitively challenged community so they can find out where the shuttles are. And then I'll ask Steve Caffin, because what would a bus route presentation be without Steve Caffin talking to you about DuPont Circle? So if it's okay with you, Jim, Steve, would you go ahead?
Yeah, you know, it's Jim, you know, it's funny. I didn't even put my name down because you and I have talked a lot in the past. I wanted to give others a chance. But, you know, I'm somewhat known in the area because I've been on the committee for a while. And a lot of the seniors in the last 3 or 4 months have come up to me and have noted that they've been waiting 30, 40 minutes for their 42 bus, which is the, you know, the bus that stops at DuPont Circle and DuPont Circle North. And this is also a bus I've noticed that's serving a lot of the embassy staff that is required even during the pandemic to come to the, you know, to come to the embassies, I guess, as essential workers. They tend to use buses, I see, especially if they're connecting to a bus later on as they're going back and forth. And so, you know, I know the difference between what the 43 does and 42 does, and I'm just wondering whether there might be more, less 43 and more 42 bus during off-peak hours when perhaps that quickness through the tunnel isn't needed. And also whether there might be more better service into the DuPont Circle North stop of the 42, which is the primary connector from bus to rail and rail to bus for persons with disabilities using that elevator.
As you indicated, we've talked about this numerous times, and the service plan that we put into effect, you know, was the result of a pretty well participated community process. And one of our goals is to keep things as consistent as we can. So having the 42-43 pattern, now that it's been established for what, 2 years now, we went back and we reviewed the ridership numbers, and they're pretty well balanced. We think that with the travel time savings, the 43 can continue to provide that quicker trip downtown. And the number of trips, you know, when we made that change, we did increase total trips along that corridor. So I appreciate that that people would like to see a Route 42 more frequently, but I would say that it's on balance, we think that the split service is the best way to serve the community because of the demand for riders to get south of DuPont and make their final connections in the downtown area, which is the primary purpose of the line. I can provide all sorts of information sources so riders can avoid a long wait at that location, because it's certainly not ideal with just the one bus shelter on the southbound and then having to cross Connecticut to get to the shelter on the northbound. So our goal as part of this is to make sure that we've got enough trips on that line to stay at 20 or below passengers per trip and to operate reliably so people can tell when the bus shows up.
Jim, thank you. That's super. I'll ask you to check for hands up and anybody that would like to ask another question.
We have Doris. Ray, her hand is up. Doris, go ahead. We can, there we go.
Can I go ahead?
Yes, please.
Oh, okay.
You're on the clock.
Thank you. How are you? Listen, I was wondering, in Northern Virginia, you were mentioning some lines that are going to run until 2 a.m., and I'm wondering whether they're really running till 2 a.m. or whether you're saying they're going to run after midnight, depending on where schedules originally were. I noted that one of these that you said was the Arlington Boulevard line, and I'm wondering which segment of Arlington Boulevard you're talking about.
Yeah, the 1A, and that will go out to Dunloring.
Right, okay, so you're not running the 1C then.
That is correct.
That late.
And the specific commitment is that no trips will begin after 2 a.m. But so, you know, a bus leaving Ballston at 1:45 would run out toward Dunloring and would finish its trip around 2:15.
Oh, I see. Okay. So, and that bus is going to go through Seven Corners as well, right?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
So, but you're not running the other half of the line that goes out to Fair Oaks and the Government Center or all the neighborhoods?
That's correct. The ridership on that segment wouldn't warrant running service this late in the evening.
During the pandemic era. You have no
new messages. Even before the pandemic, the late night travel to those far reaches of Fairfax, especially when there's a railroad that people can leapfrog out to Vienna or West Falls or Dunloring, it's pretty light out there. So we're trying to focus on where we think we can encourage riders based on, you know, past patterns of behavior.
Thank you.
And I'm wondering
Patrick Sheehan, you're up next.
Thank you, Phil. Jim, great presentation. Thank you very much for that. I actually have a question concerning bus stops, if I might.
Please.
In Maryland, particularly in Montgomery County, we are fighting this thing called floating bus stops, where they have made the bicycle a protected bike path. Yes. And you've got a conflict between bicycles and pedestrians, particularly blind pedestrians. I noticed that in DC, you have these structures, which I would have called extended curbs or floating bus stops or whatever, but the purpose of those bus stops, it does not allow for a protected bike lane. I guess I'm asking for confirmation on that first. And then secondly, the construction of these unusual bus stops, floating bus stops, if you want to call them that, in DC are totally different than the ones that are put together in Maryland or maybe Virginia. Isn't that confusing for a pedestrian to know what's happening where?
It's confusing for bus stop managers as well. So just so we can use the same nomenclature, the typical bus stop is called a tangent curb stop. That's where the bus pulls up to an existing curb and people are able to get on and off the bus through the front and the rear doors. Then there is a bus bulb, which is where the curb is extended to the same depth as the parking lane so that the bus is able to stay in the lane of travel and service the customers at a bulb. And then you have the floating stop, which, as you described, has the bus stop itself separate from the sidewalk with a bike path most often occurring between the bus platform itself and the sidewalk. DDOT has been, so we have had a number of bus bulbs created around the region. Arlington has led in a number of instances through the Roslyn-Ballston corridor. And they're designed to help speed up boarding and alighting, to make the bus operation safer, and to provide capacity for sidewalk, for shelters and benches where the sidewalk is typically inadequate to support that. And we certainly encourage those. DDOT has been active in building several of the floating stops, and probably the most fully built out are the ones along 14th Street from U Street south to Thomas Circle. Where they built them specifically as part of a whole infrastructure program. And they seem to work, I think, better than most because they put a lot of effort into making sure that there's handrails to keep people from stepping off of the platforms. And there's a very clear pedestrian crossing of the bike path with visual treatments and rougher pavement to make sure that the bikes slow down. I think they've done an exemplary job with everything except their ruler. They didn't use the same ruler that that we use, and somehow they got a couple inches off of the depth of their platform. But Carol straightened them out very quickly, and we figured out a way around that. I haven't seen the specific plan that Montgomery has. We've been working with them to try and resolve these issues, but unfortunately the bike lobby is a lot more passionate than sometimes the bus lobby when it comes to those kind of accommodations. And especially where you've got a high volume bike lane, you know, there's a safety consideration, and so that's why they've chosen to do the floating stop to allow that bike lane to continue as protected rather than like with the bulb out where the bike lane actually, or the, even the tangent, the bike lane has to either move into traffic or they go to a dotted line configuration, meaning that there's merging, weaving traffic in that location.
Mm-hmm. One thing, if I could just follow up, one thing that I have found is that you are changing the conflict between buses and bikes to buses and pedestrians. You're expecting the bicyclists to have good traffic safety knowledge and experience or education. Mm-hmm. But the blind person doesn't know that there's a bike zipping down on top of them because you can't hear them. And I don't know that there's anything safety-wise on the street that allows you to hear these bikes as they zip along at 15, 20 miles an hour. So as they,
I take your observations seriously. We have represented those concerns as well. That's where I think the slowing the traffic down is probably the best accommodation that we can have, like what DDOT did on the 14th Street.
Mm-hmm. And Jim, if you'd like, I can send you some information that we've done, that we've prepared in Montgomery County here, as the individual's reaction with respect to the various types of bus stops, if you'd find that useful.
I would also point out, living in a college town where bicycles are rampant, mm-hmm. The situation can be controlled by the police. A moving bicycle at 15 to 25 miles an hour is a moving vehicle. And once they realize that they need to obey the law, and that they also need to realize in many jurisdictions around the country, including New York, including Florida, that if you break the law on a bicycle, those points go on your automobile license. And it's a tremendous incentive to the bicyclist to obey the law and be courteous to all individuals that are going. And I have seen it work in a number of communities. And I think in the areas where we have floating bus stops in Montgomery, in DC, in Virginia, it is important that they be made aware of this, that they are no different than automobiles.
Right.
They are heavy, they're moving fast, and they can do major damage to pedestrians. Anyway, that's my little bit.
The one thing that the one thing that we're doing is to try and inform that conversation so that we can be clear about what the balance is in any compromise that's made. We're initiating an inventory of all of our bus stops throughout the region, not just Metrobus, but we hope to be able to include all the local stops as well. And by having a good, active, accurate database, hopefully we can support the dialogue and the decisions that go into those individual bus stop design exercises.
Good. And we'll share our information with you, Jim, and hopefully it can help promote safety for pedestrians, particularly.
Yes, and the jurisdictions can put alert type of flashing lighting in the bicycle lanes approaching these floating bus stops so that the bicyclist becomes aware that they're entering a dangerous area, just as we do for many of the crosswalks in all of the jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. And again, I know this is not a WMATA issue, but hopefully we can all lobby with our local jurisdictions in Virginia, in Maryland, and in DC. To make these safe.
Yeah.
And at that point, I'll point out we are running behind. We're now 10 minutes over. And we need to get ready to talk about the new escalators. And if the escalator team is available, I will ask them when they do their presentation to talk to us about the lighting on the escalators. And before we do that, I'm going to ask Barbara Melville and Doris Ray to discuss some of the issues the low vision community has had with the current escalator lighting, where the very bright lights cause tremendous difficulty in boarding the escalators, going from dark to very bright light. The other thing I would like them to address is that when there is more than one escalator at a location, when one of them goes down, it is important that the up escalator is always functioning. And if when you do your escalator presentation, where there's going to be redundancy of escalators, discuss the policy of always having an up escalator going. So at this point, I will yield the floor to Barbara. And then when Barbara finishes in 3 minutes, we'll ask Doris to add to that discussion. And then we will turn it over to the escalator presentation. Barbara, please.
Hey gang, Barbara Millville here. The lighting is a challenge for certain segments of the low vision population. Some don't mind the brighter lights. They appreciate that it does assist in their navigation down steps. I try to remind them they should probably just stand there and wait for the escalators to move them down, but they have places to go. The low vision population, as you may know, is quite diverse. So then you have the other end of the spectrum, and I'm maybe stealing Doris's thunder here, but to where that does bother them, I would recommend that they just look straight ahead and not down at those lights, and maybe take their hand on the escalator to help them be stable. So it's really 50-50. I mean, it's not like everybody is disliking that. The lights, I think, are a lot. It's definitely an improvement. You go down in a long escalator like Wheaton or Friendship Heights, and the whole area around it that's difficult to light. So those are appreciated. What's also appreciated on the steps of the escalator is the yellow patch, the yellow strip, because that really helps people to know how to get on the escalator and where the step is ending. So I would recommend that you would keep a yellow, or I've seen white ones. They do tend to wear away, but they are helpful. So that's it.
Barbara, thank you. And Doris, if you would like to add anything to the lighting on the escalators for the low vision community, please.
Yes, I would. I would say that since the new escalators have come in, I personally find it in many circumstances very dangerous to use the new escalators. Many people in the vision impaired community, as Barbara said, there is a range of vision, are light sensitive as well. For example, people who have glaucoma or cataracts, other issues with your cornea and other issues. So that the problem with the escalators is escalator design right now is that well-lighted steps are just fine, but to have the light set so that it shines up into your eyes counters the effect of having bright lighting, because it washes out contrast, which is what many people with vision impairment are using to navigate. And in fact, one of the things that I found that it also washes out is the effect of having the yellow strip. So, and if you think about it, also the whole effect is magnified because the sides of the escalators are now silver metal color rather than the dark brown color that was originally in there, so there's no softening of the light, and the lights are high intensity. The other thing I will say is that the ends of the escalators have been, for lack of a better way of putting it, the crack that was there is smoothed out, so when you're using the cane, it's harder to detect, particularly anybody initially using the escalators. So that would mean dangerous for vision. Well, that is very problematic, and it's my impression that the escalators are moving more quickly. Maybe that's just because they're, but in many environments, I would not use them. And even during the daytime, for example, at Judiciary Square, the first time I used the new escalator there was during the daytime, and the sun, it was coming to a meeting, so it was around 4 PM. And during the daytime, the sun shines onto the top of the escalators, and I could neither see nor feel where the end of the escalator was, and I knew when I got there, because there is an incline, I might fall over. It was very, very dangerous, and I just don't want to, I won't even use it anymore. So I think greater thought has to be given to making some modifications to the escalators as they are, and certainly as we go forward to installing new ones. And I also wanted to reiterate what Phil said about, and Phil, I'm missing the other point that you made. I'm forgetting the other point that you made, but I knew it was very important.
Thank you, Doris.
Help me with the other point that you made, because I want to, that was.
It dangerous. Was about always having an up escalator running when one of
Is what I want to say about that is when you're in a station like Pentagon and one set of the escalators is down and you have to walk all the way up and all the way around or roll all the way around to get your bus, it is. It's a bad situation, and you can't get there quick enough if your train just gets you there in time. So people miss buses and have to stand for an hour waiting for a new bus. So I think that should be fine.
Doris, thank you. Anew, is Mr. Marshall going to be doing the elevator escalator presentation, or do we have someone else that wants to do that?
Chair Posner, we have Mitch Nietzsche with us. He is going to give us the presentation.
Okay, so we let them go. We've used up some of their time, and hopefully they will address the questions that we have had so far from Ms. Ray and from Ms. Miller.
So good afternoon. So as part of, I brought with me, besides Rolando Grimaldi, who attends the meetings with me, Mr. Cedric Watson. Some of you know Cedric. Cedric is the project manager for all the escalators and elevator rehabilitation and replacement. He's leading the charge with this current contract. Before he speaks about this, I would just like to just back up a little bit and mention that there is a procedure in place, and it's a rail procedure, that if there is one escalator that available for any reason, that escalator shall run in the up direction. So shall run in the direction of egress. So if you're finding that that's not happening, you can reach out to rail or reach out to me or somebody on my team, and we'll try to find out why that's not happening, but it should happen. It shouldn't be a situation where there's only a down running escalator. Some of the concerns that I heard some of the committee bring up are addressed with new escalators. Unfortunately, I wish we would have known that we were going to speak about lighting. I would have had some of the engineers with me to discuss that. I don't have them with me, but maybe next time we're invited back, we'll bring some engineers to speak about that. So I'm going to go ahead and let Mr. Watson go ahead and speak, but there's a lot of information in the PowerPoint I sent you. So when it gets to the point where you're looking at maps, Cedric's not going to speak about that, right? Okay, go ahead, Cedric.
I will also volunteer our low vision members in the low vision community to come out and test lighting for you. at sunrise and sunset. And so that way you'll have the people that are most troubled, and I'm sure they would be delighted to help get the appropriate level of lighting.
So we have learned a lot. I'll tell you what, I really have learned a lot in the last 6+ months about low sighted community, people with lower vision. And I know, I don't know if Carol's on the line, but our engineer Gideon had been working with a new elevator hall station with a halo to determine, because I know that's a big issue with trying to determine the call button with the emergency button. And when we were using different shades of green, that's when I got this amazing education that what we may see, people with low vision may not see. They may see it as a different color. So Carol did a great job of educating us. So we continue to work with Carol in trying to get the best product out here. And every generation we try to improve. So we'll keep that in mind, and I won't take up Cedric's time. Cedric, go ahead and take it away.
I will mention one other thing that we have talked about for 3 years now. Stations like Ballston, when you come in at Ballston and go through the fair gate going towards the district, you have to walk by two up escalators before you get to the down escalator. It's almost a quarter of a mile that you have to walk to get to a down escalator. And we have requested forever that the first escalator that you come to from the fare gate is a down escalator, so you can get to the platform and catch your train. Mm-hmm. Clarendon, it's so bad that actually in the old days when we were only running 6-car trains, mm-hmm. by the time you got to the down escalator, you got to the platform mm-hmm. behind the last car of the train and then had to walk back to actually be able to board the train. Mm-hmm. So we are requesting that when there are multiple escalators between the fare gate and the platform, that the closest to the fare gate be ones that take you to the platform.
In most stations, I believe that's correct. That's the way that the configuration is. Elevator escalator, we support the railroad. We make suggestions, not decisions. I believe in this case, I can send you the name. Not sure if it was Michael Eichler or someone over in plan had made that change a few years back. Because I remember that station is different. We get a lot of complaints because in most cases you go through the fair gate.
With them for quite some time. Mm-hmm. In Ballston, it's very interesting. And in Clarendon, that the trains heading to Virginia, mm-hmm. the down escalator is right by the entrance gate. It's the ones going to the district that mm-hmm. you have to walk a quarter of a mile to get to them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, I'll try to get you the decision maker. I can't tell you who made that decision, but I do recall that was changed a while back because I remember we were getting a lot of complaints when the change happened.
Thank you. That would be wonderful.
Sure. I knew it. Remind me. I'll send you a contact. Cedric, go ahead and take it away.
Cedric, let me know when you would like me to share my screen to show your presentation.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you all for allowing us to bring you up to speed with our current replacement project. I'd like to take this opportunity now to just give you a brief background of the project. WMATA, on December 24th, 2020, issued a notice to proceed to Kone Inc., which is the escalator manufacturer, to replace 130 escalators throughout the Metrorail system by December 2027. As a part of WMATA's capital improvement program efforts. The work is highly sequenced to minimize the impact to WMATA customers and employees. Excuse my screen just dropped down. You just brought up the screen?
I did, and if you can see it, please let me know.
Yes, thank you.
Yes, it's very good and it's complicated.
Yes.
So if you will try to detail that would be very nice.
Okay, the contract itself for the replacement of 130 escalators. This first slide identifies and has some pictures on it showing some of the recent replacements with the escalators. As you can see, as we discussed, you see the lighting and the yellow strips on the side of the escalators, which are the demarcation strips, which determines the breakup of the steps and the lighting there, that which we discussed previously for that first picture. And there's a picture on the slide as well, which is an escalator being lifted in, a new escalator being lifted in to our Smithsonian Station on the north side, right there on the Washington Mall. Next slide, please. This is the project overview. As I indicated earlier, Ellis contract F20064 consists of the replacement of 130 escalators throughout the Metro Rail system. The expected duration for this contract is approximately 7 years. The plan is to have approximately about 18 units out of service during any time, including walker units as we go through this program. All escalators included in this contract at a Pacific station will be completed before we move to the next station. Next slide, please. General description of the escalator replacement consists of removal of the existing escalators and fabrication and installation of the new heavy duty escalators. Design persisted for our transit system using WMATA transit authority specifications and so forth. This involves the installation of new escalators in the existing wellway at stations within WMATA system. Work performed will provide new escalators complete and ready for use in compliance with all applicable codes and requirements of the contract. Next slide, please. Additional work. In addition to the escalator work, several locations require additional architectural, electrical, and structural work, including providing standalone controllers and enclosure cabinets along the escalators in the station, rerouting of power feeds and new controller locations, concealing new electrical routing via trenching or trench through removing and reinstalling suspended ceilings, removal and or relocation of existing facilities, i.e. station maps and old phones and shelters, et cetera. Next slide, please. This slide here is the unit listing where each of the stations, that the 30 stations identify work for replacement of escalators, starting with Addison Road, Boston Station, Benning Road, Brooklyn Catholic University, Capitol South, Crystal City, Deanwood, Dunloring, DuPont Circle, Farragut North, Federal Center Southwest, Franconia Springfield, Gallery Place, Grosvenor, LaFont Plaza, Medical Center, Metro Center, National Airport, New Carrollton, Pentagon, Pentagon City, Potomac Avenue, Rhode Island Avenue, Rockville, Roslyn, Silver Spring, Tacoma Park, Tinleytown, Twin Brook, Union Station, Vienna, and Virginia Square. Those are the 30 stations, 130 stations that will have escalators replaced throughout the station as part of this contract. Next slide, please. Now, this slide here is a station sequence of schedule. This is the first of the locations of where we plan to start. As some of you may know, we've already started work at the Gallery Place West entrance on the 9th and G Street side. As part of this contract, of the first location where we'll be replacing it, or where we are replacing escalators at this period. The stations are in sequence: Gallery Place, New Carrollton, Rhode Island Avenue, Federal Center Southwest, Virginia Square, Pentagon City, Tinleytown, Brooklyn, Capital South, Metro Center, Silver Spring. Those are the first 11. Deanwood, DuPont Circle, Union Station, LaFont Plaza, Tacoma Park, Farragut North, Rockville, Grosvenor, National Airport, Addison Road, Dunloring. Those are the next location stations. The following stations are Potomac Avenue, Boston, Benning Road, Roslyn, Twin Brook, Franconia Springfield, Pentagon, Deanna, Medical Center, Gallery Place East, and Crystal City. Those are the stations sequence for our current schedule at this time. Next slide, please. This slide here is a station map sign, which is identifying the location of where the escalators in question that are going to be replaced in the station of Addison Road. And they reflect this escalators number one and number two at the entrance of Addison Road on the platform to be replaced. The two entrance escalators along with exterior controller cabinets. Next slide, please. The next slide is a station map of the Boston station, and it identifies the six escalators that will be replaced in that entrance location, starting from escalator number one all the way to escalator number three. Escalator three, one through three in the entrance and in the intermediate level, escalators number three, four, five, and six. Next slide, please. This slide here is the Benning Road station, which is identifying the three entrance and the two platform escalators to be replaced in this station. Next slide, please.
Cedric.
Yes.
So I know we're probably over on time, and what the next few slides just indicate is we're on the map in the station. We can share that with the group for dispersion if that helps, but I was hoping you can speak a little bit to the committee on some of the features and some of the nuances that they may be interested in hearing. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I also don't want to run out of time without telling them some of the new features and how they're put in place. I just didn't want to miss that.
Okay. Some of the new features for the escalators will include, as we indicated earlier, some LED, new LED lighting, soft stocks, variable frequency drives. These are components that help conserve the energy of the usage as we operate the escalators. We'll be installing UVA handrail sanitizers, which will be attached to the handrails, which help limit the surface bacteria on the handrails. We are also improving the overall component upgrades of our system there with different controller applications in bringing the escalator up to current code. In addition to several different locations, canopies will be added, which will protect the value and extend the life of the escalators as well. Those are just some of the things that we're doing, not too long, knowing that I'm getting short here on time, but is there any questions?
Hi, this is Barbara. I have a comments, please.
Yes.
I was thinking about this, and I believe if it's not too late, if we could have some lights on the escalator that are a lower K, like the 7,000 K, that's like really glaring, harsh light. If you could bring it down to more like 4,000 K, 3,000, that I think that would address some of, for example, Doris's needs. It may not necessarily be.
Barbara, by K, you mean kilowatt?
Yes.
And actually, this is Doris.
That's Kelvin.
It's just not Doris's need. It's the need of anyone who has light-sensitive disabilities, and there are many vision impairments, and there are many of us. So, and many seniors. For example, I have glaucoma or cataracts. And right. So, you know, I think looking at the lighting and looking at the contrast is very important, because for many of us, actually, there were some helpful things about the old design in terms of coloration, contrast, and softer lighting. I'm not saying the illumination necessarily level, but I'm talking about a softer lighting.
That's exactly what we're talking about.
Yes.
Yes, I know that, but I'm wondering, can you hood? What about the idea of, can you hood the lights so that they're going down onto the stairs rather than shining up in your face? And perhaps look at some other color for the sides of the...
Well, that could definitely be explored. And we wouldn't want anything protruding into the passageway of the escalator. But I do know that WMATA was looking into the lighting impact at each of the stations. As you know, the escalators themselves were not really originally designed to light the entranceway. The requirement for the escalator lighting, which we go through our architects and power, to identify the type of lighting necessary for each location. And we have set that standard. However, the standard set has been primarily to support the code requirement of having 5-foot candles on the steps. So when our jurisdictional inspector comes out and they measure that lighting, they put that light meter on the step, and then they ride that all the way up to ensure that we're meeting the 5-foot candle requirement. But also noted in the sensitivity of those with some lighting issues, we've also communicated how we can better light the station entrance itself, minus the escalator lighting. And I know that has been explored in various locations, because I heard somebody mention the deep stations such as Wheaton and Bethesda and other locations of that nature. As the lighting normally is on the outside and gives you that reflection off the wall because of the concrete. And with the stainless steel escalators, it does heighten the lighting. However, that's a balance in which we're trying to establish now. I know working with some of our architects in designing lighting for the escalators. So it's definitely being noted, and we're working diligently to identify what's going to be the best product out there that's going to give us what we need to service and support everyone using the system.
Mr. Wilson, thank you so much. We're running about 15 minutes behind, so I'd like to give you an opportunity to finish your presentation before we move on to the next item on the agenda. So please.
All right. Thank you. The other supporting documentation that Mitch noted earlier with the maps locating each of the station escalator locations is primarily just the remainder of the presentation. Just gives you, if you're familiar with the entrances or the footprint of our stations, those are the escalators that are going to be replaced. Giving that, right now, where we currently are, like I said, we currently have proposed for 2 entrance closures, that being Gallery Place, West North Entrance, which we're currently working at, and Pentagon City, as that work continues there, because there's a lot of adjacent construction work underway as we move along there. And that plan currently right now is for August, late August, into early May of next year, as we renovate both entrances for the Pentagon City. So at this point, that's all I have. If there's any more questions, I'll be glad to answer.
Thank you, Cedric. Chair Posner, this is Anu.
Mr. Anu, are there any hands up?
We do have a few hands up. Steve Kaplan, followed by Philippa Mazel, and then Patrick Sheehan.
Okay, right. And so okay. Let's give them a total of 6 minutes. That's 2 minutes each. And then we'll move into open discussion and public comments.
Sure. Oh, okay. Very quickly, are the new escalators going to affect the speed of the escalators? And I ask because on some of the longer ones, such as Roslyn and DuPont Circle, it seems to take, they seem to run very slowly. And I wonder if that's a function of the age or a function of safety.
That is a function of safety. Our escalators currently now are set to run at 90 feet per minute. And that's an opportunity we've taken to slow the escalators down. They can run up to 100 feet per minute per code, but we don't run them at 100 feet per minute. We've come to adjustment of 90 feet per minute on a majority of all of our escalators should be running between 90 feet per minute.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. Philippa, go ahead.
Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. I had meant to comment earlier, but either Zoom or iPhone changed my configuration and my raise hand button went from the top to a small button at the bottom. But I just wanted to add my 2 cents regarding the lighting issue. I am one of those people that bright lights definitely blind me. I remember being blinded at Gallery Place a few years ago when the lights were hyped up. So I just wanted to offer my service, but not at sunrise or sunset, as Chairman Phillip suggested, but offer my service as well whenever we're dealing with the lighting issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Philippa. Patrick Sheehan, go ahead, please.
Yeah, real quick. The lighting that you have at Glenmore, where the lighting sort of follows the handrail, is that what you're talking about as far as the lighting with the escalators?
Well, I'm talking about the lighting on the balustrade of the escalators, the side panel.
Right, uh-huh, yeah.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying is gonna be the standard lighting, let's say, with the new escalators?
The standard lighting currently on, we're specifically talking, the station you were referring to, Patrick?
Glenmont.
Yes, that currently is the standard lighting along the incline of the escalator that follows the handrail.
Great. Inside the escalator. That makes it much easier to follow and find the escalators because you can see these lights as they're going up following the handrail. I like that a lot. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, thank you. At this point, we do not have anyone else's hand up for this section of the discussion.
Thank you, Anu. What I would like to do to get us back on schedule is combine the open discussion with the public comments. And sure. The major things that we want to discuss in the open discussion are the current work doing by the board and taking a look at potential changes in fare policy. And that would be the concept of going to a flat fare for Metro Access. And also, if Mr. Blake would like to talk about the audio recordings on the new Metro Access vans and sedans, or any other updates he would like to give us as a preview to the Metro Access meeting in 2 weeks. And any members of the public that would like to participate in that, feel free to do that, and we'll let Anu handle the raised hands. And I'll ask everybody to try to stay focused and keep their comments within 3 minutes so we can have time to finish the meeting with our reports from Bus Rail and Metro Access. So Anu, you are officially in charge.
Thank you, sir. So we do have 2 members of the public with us who would like to make comments. And we also have Tino Calabria's hand up. So first one, Doris, I'm sorry, are you trying to say something? Okay. So first would be Beryl Nirman. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. And then we have Heidi Case, if she's still connected with us, and then Tino Calabria. So Beryl, go ahead, please.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. I had some concerns because with them changing the fare gates to new technology, one of my concerns is, you know, I use a Metro Access card when I'm not working to get, you know, places, and my Metro Access card, you know, works on the current fare gates, but I've not been able to update my address with Metro Access people to tell them, hey, I'm not at this apartment number, at this apartment number, and I don't know what the process is anymore because it's been 3 years. And my card runs out of, expires in mid-July. And along with that, you know, I was issued a card many years ago when I sat on this very committee, and I still have it from Richard White, you know, 20 years ago, that had a lower fare, you know, long before they had Metro Access cards actually working on fare gates. And, you know, I'm always one of these people that wants to have more than one card. But I guess, I don't know if it means that if I have Metro Access privileges, that I cannot get a reduced fare card also for the times that I am not, you know, my Metro Access card may not work, or I may have it in a different purse or something like that. So I wanted to know what the policy is on that as well. And I have some other comments, but I don't want to take up too much time. But
thank you. Mr. Blake, would you answer that for us?
Yes, and great questions on both of them. No, the second answer is no, you can't have both eligibility for Metro Access, which comes with the free ride program, and have a reduced fare card. Part of the reason, of course, we're trying to protect from individuals, not saying you, but somebody would get the Metro Access card and then give the reduced fare card to somebody else to use when they don't need it. So no, we don't have multiple eligibility to that extent. And then the to simply update your address, if you I could put in the chat the phone number, but I'll just say it out loud as well, but I'll put it in the chat. Just please dial 202-962-2700. And
I tried that, couldn't get a human being. So then I also sent an email to eligibility at wilmata.com, and no response. And that's one of the reasons.
So when did this occur? Let me just ask you, just out of curiosity, when did this occur?
Well, I called probably because I knew that like you need like 3 months because I've had to go to a doctor and get him to fill out paperwork, even though I have a long-term disability of cerebral palsy and I use a wheelchair. I mean,
well, I know that
I called maybe in February, and then
it was February. Okay, you
know, 2 weeks ago.
No problem. The director of the eligibility office, Chris Colbert, is on this call and this meeting, and he's hearing this, so I'm sure his office will be in touch with you tomorrow.
Okay, well, that's good. And so, if I want a second card, I don't have eligibility for both. I just need to get some kind of regular fare card in the event that I want to have a backup card and not have discounted fare. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. That would be the case. Yes.
Okay.
Because if you got a second Metro Access card, we would disable the old card because it would be presumably lost. So yes, you would have to just get a regular Smart Trip card. But as you know, okay. I don't know about your conditions and personal situation, but if you have a cell phone, you know we're going to be moving to the cell phone and other digital fare payments as well. So there may be some other options for you, but as far as eligibility cards, reduced fare or Metro Access, yes, it's only one card at a time.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll just use my Capital's WIN card as my second card in case, you know, I'm trying to get through a fare gate and my Metro Access card, once it gets renewed, isn't available for some reason. Thank you.
I understand. And Mr. Chair, I see that Ms. Heidi Case looks like she wants to make a comment. I'm just letting you know. We can go in order, but I don't want you to miss her.
Yes, please. Yes. Thank you. Heidi, you have the platform. Thank you.
Maybe she's not ready just yet. So while I You asked for
I am ready. I was speaking. I didn't realize I was muted.
Okay, go ahead, please.
Okay. Sorry about that. I said I was on Metro Access, and then when I got near my home, I lost signal, and then they put me off and everything. So thank you. I am now doing Metro Access twice a day to and from work. I'm traveling from DC all the way into Fairfax. So I spend a good part of my, you know, pretty much an hour each way. But I have had mostly excellent experience. I had such a pleasant trip home today. Consider it accommodation. I mean, his customer service, his how was your day, his actual interest was wonderful. So whoever from Metro Access is there, please note that. But I have had two really awful experiences. One was Friday, April 23rd, my trip home, which is 5:15 to 5:45 window. It was a very new woman. She was so nervous. She would say, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute, when we were driving, and get all upset and shake her arms. And then she really didn't seem to know what she was doing and get, it was scary. I mean, this was getting close to my house, and I was trying to tell her it's just parked right there. That's the accessible entrance. Yes,
Allison Anderson, I think, is in the room. And Allison, can you at some point get in touch with Heidi to get all of the appropriate numbers and reports?
But just to say, she lifted the lift back up after while I was getting off, and I was still on the back, my wheels were on the lift, and she like almost dumped me into the street. I couldn't figure out what was happening. So that was one. And then last Thursday, we had supervisors on the call. The gentleman, he seemed to be so new, he didn't really understand how the lift worked, and he wouldn't even try to lower it when my feet are a little bit over the, because they weren't touching the gate or impacting it, because I have a very large wheelchair. He left me sitting up there, hanging, refusing to let me down. And ultimately, this was this last Thursday, the 29th, my trip home, Allison. I had to let myself down off the lift. He was so upset and over to the front of the vehicle, yelling at supervisors about how he couldn't do that. It wasn't allowed, that I let myself down off the lift. I reached around. So I'm happy to talk to you, Allison, but I just, many good experiences. I want to say I've been pleasantly surprised overall, but a couple of bad ones, bad enough that I felt like it was important to report.
Well, certainly, Ms. Case, I will, I've already recorded your report, but I will be in touch with you to talk further.
Allison, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Chair Posner, this is Anu. Tina Calabia has his hand up. Tina, go ahead and make a comment.
Yes, Tina, I'll ask you whether you would like to just make your comment during the bus rail report.
As long as we have it, because it wasn't mentioned when you went down the agenda, you didn't mention it. Sure, I do want to comment on the minutes of the last minute.
Okay. Yes, if you have suggestions for the minutes, if you would email them to Anu and we can make the corrections.
Okay, I do have a question about them, so I'll hold it off until you're finished with the rest of the issue.
Okay. At this point, we do not have anyone else who would like to make any comments during the public comment section.
So I will
Anu, jump in. This is Heidi. Could I just add to a positive? I just wanted to say that I got asked to do a survey call on how I canceled trips and made trips, et cetera, which in essence was a lot about using the online service, and it motivated me to try it. And I have to say, it's 100% better than the old way. I just tried it for the first time this weekend, and it's really convenient and easy, and I will use it. So I wanted to give that feedback to Mr. Blake also.
And I'm glad to hear that too, Heidi, for one who uses it also.
Thank you. Much, much better.
Well, thanks everybody for your feedback. And Heidi, yes, we're sorry about those two trip experiences. And I'm going to follow up with Allison once she has worked with our quality assurance contractor to investigate that situation. And if retraining is necessary, not just for those two, but for the entire team, we'll do so. Just real quick in response to the chairman, a couple of things. Yes, we're gonna have, as I sent out an email, we're gonna have a situation where certain members of the leadership, well, the leadership is not certain, but the leadership of the AAC and the bus and rail, the Metrax, the subcommittee, will be able to test out the audio in, I guess for lack of a better word, hear how loud or clear it is. And we're going to arrange that. My goal is to have the arrangement before the meeting takes place, the Metrax, the subcommittee meeting, so that members can report out. So Anu is going to be in touch with you all about the coordination of how we're going to make that happen. And also at that meeting, yes, Dr. Phil, we're going to talk about the fares and how the fare calculator works. But also, you know, again, you're advocating in terms of you, the committee is advocating for a simpler, i.e. flat fare, flat Metro Access fare. Metro Access staff, management staff, we're not opposed to that concept. We're not necessarily advocating, if you will, openly here, but you know clearly when I'm opposed to something. I think you know clearly when I'm sort of okay with something.
That's wonderful. And of course, I know you will get the numbers to the appropriate people of what the cost of the fare calculator is in time and contracts and what have you. Yes. And, you know, as with the last time, you have always been so helpful in our advocacy and in our suggestions. And we want to give you a big hands up and a pat on the back.
Well, I appreciate that. But also, I just want you to know, as the just so you know, the flat fare is a concept, is a policy matter. In terms of what the number could be, because I think you all have seen in the news and heard from the board meeting that there's even talk at the board level about fares and in on the fixed route side to draw people back in. So before we even get into, when I say we, I'm talking about you all as a committee, get into what the flat fare number should be, I think we may need to hold off on that because it may be higher than what the law would allow us to even charge, if you get my drift. So let's see what the fare structure is going to be while you advocate, though, for the concept of a flat fare. So once the fare structure is settled, rather it changes or doesn't change, the concept has been, if you will, advocated strong enough that it could happen sooner rather than later.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Blake. Chair Posner, before we move on to the bus and rail subcommittee report and the Metro Access subcommittee report, if I could take a quick moment and share some information with the committee. The RAC meeting is on this Wednesday, that would be May 5th. And the RAC would be getting a presentation about the 8,000 series rail cars, just like we did last month. If any of the members would like to attend that meeting, you have, because of this presentation, you know.
Anu, this is Rico Dancy. He had something to ask you about that.
Okay, sure.
Say or message. I'm sorry, keep going. I knew.
Okay. So I just wanted to share this information that the VAC would be receiving a presentation about the 8,000 rail car series. I'm assuming it'll be similar to what we had received. And if any of the members would like to attend that meeting to see, get the presentation again, see it again, hear it again, you can. And if you have any questions about how to attend the RAC meeting, please let me know. Email me and I will provide you with the link or the tools to connect to the RAC meeting.
Yes, the link will be posted on the WMATA website along with the agenda where they will be electing their new leadership for the RAC. They will then have the presentation on the 8,000 series. And there will also be an update on current budget issues and fare issues for bus and rail. So that's all available on the website. And either Anu or I will send you out the link to that spot on the website.
Okay. Should we move on to the reports, Chair Posner?
Yes, please. And then Anu, if you would like to make your announcement about the appropriate phone call and contact information if the public would like to have anything included.
Actually, I can do that right now while we speak. So anyone looking to make public comments, you can send us an email at metroaacchair@wmata.com, or you can call our office and leave a message. The number is 202-962-1100. Thank you.
Well, terrific. We have 25 minutes. We have not heard from the African Queen tonight, and her hand is up. So I suggest we let the Queen speak, and then when she is finished, Tino can make his public comment and go right into his bus rail report. And then when Tino is finished, we will go to Paul. So, Denise? Ms. Rush, please.
Okay, this is Denise Rush. I want to get a better understanding of when you schedule a trip now in this, and you're riding in the sedan. You have to remember that only one person and not the CPA can ride with you. Is that correct?
Mr. Blake, can you?
That is correct.
Yes, that is correct. For the sedan, to promote further social distancing, we're having people travel in the sedan who are traveling alone. So if you're booking a trip on Metro Access and you're traveling with a PCA or a companion, your trip will be assigned to a Metro Access van.
Okay, so automatically, those who don't know that, the public might not, you know that. So when they book a trip, how will they know that? I mean,
well, keep in mind, we're offering rider choice in terms of people can request sedans, but keep in mind that has never been a guarantee. So when you book a trip on Metro Access, you're booking a trip to ride one of our vehicles. You can ask to be in a sedan, as some members of the committee have done. But even when you request to ride in a sedan, that's not a guarantee. So you will be booking a trip on Metro Access, and a Metro Access vehicle will come and pick that customer up. So it's not like the customer has to choose. If the customer wants to travel with a PCA or a companion, the fact that Metro Access is only booking individuals who are traveling alone on sedans does not have any role in their booking process, because there's no guarantee you would be in a sedan whether you're alone or not.
Okay, I'm just trying to get the full understanding.
Yes, ma'am. This is just, it just, during the pandemic, and what we're saying is we wanted customers to travel who are traveling alone so that we can have somebody sitting in the right rear passenger seat diagonally opposite of the driver to allow the science-based airflow to occur in the car. We just didn't want somebody sitting behind the driver. But again, that should not impact a customer's decision to book a trip or not book a trip.
Thank you. And I'll let Doris have her comment for 2 minutes, and then we will move on to Tino and Paul to have the last 20 minutes to close out the discussion. So Doris, you have 2 minutes and you're on the clock.
Regarding the discussion with Ms. Rush, I would request, Mr. Blake, that you check into this because I don't think you can restrict use of a type of metro access vehicle. You can't restrict somebody who is using their PCA, including people who have sighted guides, for example, or people who are deafblind and have SSPs who... but any kind of PCA, I understood when you brought this up the last time, at the last meeting or last couple of meetings about companions, but I don't think you can restrict some PCA, and the only restriction I think you could make would be to make them sit in the back rather than the front for COVID reasons. So could you please check that out?
We have, I'm not sure which checking out you're referring to, because again, no one is guaranteed a ride in a sedan. So I'm not sure the restriction you're referring to.
But if you offer the service back and if you schedule it, I don't think you can restrict a person using their PCA.
Offer what service and what restriction are you referring to help me out?
Well, I mean, if it's there and an offered service and it's provided and you could potentially, if you ask it, get scheduled for it, you shouldn't restrict the PCA coming with somebody because, I mean, that has come up actually. That issue has come up with some other systems that are local. And so I'm just asking you to check the status of PCA is equivalent to the person themselves. It's an extension of the person.
Okay.
So, the whole idea of PCAs being restricted as a second person, I don't think jives with the concept of the ADA. Certainly companions, yes. But.
Well, normally I would agree with you on that, but when you use the term service, the service that Metro is offering is called Metro Access. Riding in a sedan is not the service. Riding in a sedan is a means of providing the service that is guaranteed under federal law. But you know, I don't want to take up because I know Tino wants to get to his report and we're already at 7:15. We'll follow up more at the next meeting, but I don't want to take up too much time on a philosophical debate when Tino has a report he wants to get. But thank you, though.
Thank you, Mr. Blake.
Thank you. And so we'll let Tino and Paul enjoy themselves for the last 15 minutes.
I'm going to get 5. We already know this.
Well, am I to go now?
Yes, please, Tino.
Yes.
You've got the mic, and the clock is ticking.
Anu, you mentioned that the RAC is meeting on Wednesday, and you said that you would provide people with how to access the meeting.
I will email everyone, yes. I can do that.
In connection with their subject, and I think you said they're going to talk about the 8000 series?
Yes, they're getting the presentation just like we did in the last month's meeting.
Okay. What I'd like to do is please send, and I will share with you again AAC handbook on rail car design. If you would send that on to the members, I'd appreciate it. So they'll
yes, and Tino, I will point out to you that at the RAC meeting, their policy is to have public comment at the beginning of the meeting. So if you would like to talk to them about 8,000 series, then be at the beginning of the meeting and make your comments then.
Okay, and I'll just tell you now that my comment would be to have them receive the handbook on rare car design. With respect to the draft bus rail subcommittee minutes, what we talked about first was Arlington Transit made a presentation on their bus system, including the accessibility features of their buses and what access transit they have for individuals. We also discussed the platform improvement project. Tatiana came again and she discussed that. And at that point, Dr. Posner asked about the benches at the platforms. then we discussed the rail announcements update and the platform seating, which Carol handled. And during that, she mentioned that part of the platform seating is a granite bench for those who need to be seated. We had a discussion about that. And again, Dr. Posner mentioned that it would be helpful to have certain kinds of support for people with disabilities who are using that seating. And while it's possible for some support to be added to the shelter, apparently because the benches are made of granite, it would not be possible to make adjustments to the granite bench itself. And at that point, I said that I asked whether having granite benches means that no adjustment could be made because they're made of granite. And she virtually said yes, that it would be very difficult to make changes to the granite benches. So I said that, well, this is a good illustration of the fact that the Accessibility Advisory Committee members should have an opportunity to talk about products before they are set in stone, so to speak. In that way, we would be able to make a contribution based on the changes that would suit people with disabilities and the aging. I said that in line with that, we should generally be involved in design matters at the outset, and that we shouldn't be asked for our reactions after a project is concluded. And I mentioned that I wanted that for the record, and that wasn't in the draft record. I also said that this is also why we package recommendations in our AAC handbook on railcar design to share ideas beforehand. So this again shows why it's more beneficial to work with us as partners in design, not just as reactors after products are already completed. Now I'll have to adjust the draft to reflect what I asked for the record, because what's in the record does not include the thrust of what my discussion was. Lastly, we had tributes to the former AAC members, Ed McEntee and Brian Miller, and many members and others voiced their pleasure with having worked with them and their admiration for those members. So that's a rundown of the draft minutes, and I will make the corrections as I mentioned to you that I asked for to be in the record in the first place. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Tina. That was one of the most wonderful meetings I've been to, and thank you for and Anu for arranging. We had Ed's brother and cousins participate, and we had Brian's mother come and participate. And it was a very, very moving meeting, and it was very positive.
Yes.
So thank you so much for organizing it and running it.
Well, actually, Doris is the one whose idea it was, and she's the one who connected us to the family and to the mother of Brian Miller. So thanks really should go to her.
Thank you, Tina. I was about to say that Doris really made huge effort to make it as successful as it was. So thank you, Doris.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome. I just wanted to say that I had wanted to thank the committee, and Tina opened up that possibility. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and Anu, and Tino, and everyone. Just thank you. And I know that my sentiments are expressed also from the members of his colleagues at ECNB who were there. Thank you.
Huh? Am I up?
Yes, sir.
You're all right. You've got a full 10 minutes. Enjoy. Uh-huh.
So with Metro Access subcommittee meeting last month, we talked about the Metro Access sedan and got an update from Mr. Blake after I posed some questions, and along with comments from others. And we hope to get a little bit more of an update next this upcoming month as to the disposition of the child locks being used and the process of using that with the sedan and other questions that have come up about brought up by this evening. We also discussed the Metro Access fleet seatbelts. And with that, there's two pieces. Of course, there is, you know, if for some medical reason, the customer can't wear some part of the seatbelt, there is a seatbelt waiver process through the eligibility office. And as we also found out, if for other reasons, because of the tightening of the belt, one needs ADA accommodation, there's a routing process to go through with the ADAP office. So there's two different routes depending on what the reason, medical or otherwise. We also discussed we got a GPS update from the director the solicitation and some internal testing going on that doesn't involve us customers. And hopefully we'll get to hear more of any other updates as that relates to that at some point in the future as that process is going on. We got an update also from the director about safety and cleanliness, COVID related, things that some things that I brought up in terms of issues wearing face masks and the cleanliness of the vehicles. Also, along with safety, in light of what Heidi has brought up, I do expect that, the director next week will address some of that, those types of issues and what steps that we're taking to hopefully prevent that not happening again, what happened to that customer. At the next meeting, we would, as a committee, would like to hear out on that under safety, because that is very concerning. And also we discussed the Metro Access audio and video recording update. And as you heard, there will be a limited testing of it, and certain members of the AAC leadership will be able to listen and give feedback about that process. But obviously, that's not going to change the overall process of what's already currently in place. Now, Mr. Blake, I did hear a little driblets from you talking about Metro Access moving to alternate types of fare payment systems. Hopefully you can expound about that also at some future meeting.
because I did catch that.
Well, that was basically the fare calculator. The flat fare. That's basically what we're talking about.
Oh, I thought there were other types of fare payments you were thinking about besides easy pay for payment, things like that you were maybe
alluding to. No, sir. No, what I was saying is that the board.
That's what I wanted to clarify.
The board is looking at fare policy on the fixed route side, which will impact fares on Metro Access. So I was saying, let's say we get into a conversation and either yourself, the chairman, Posner, or someone says, we support a flat fare and we'll take the flat fare at $5 or $4. Let's even use $4. Well, if we go out there and say that, what happens if the board comes back and says Metro bus fare is going to be X dollars, and X dollars is less than twice the fastest fixed route equivalent fare? So I was just saying, I think right now advocacy should be focused on the concept of a flat fare and not necessarily getting into what the flat fare should be, because the final decision of fixed route fares will obviously influence what our flat fare would be.
And we're going to have that discussion next week.
The approach we have always taken is that it be a fair number, one that supplies sufficient fare box recovery for WMATA, and also one that is approvable by the FTA. So those are clearly all three of the things.
And next month we're going to have a healthy discussion about that also.
Our highest desire, obviously. But we think whatever the final fare is for a flat fare will have to be determined upon, one, what is legal according to the FTA, what is simple, and what does supply sufficient fare box recovery to maintain the service. And so that's a very good discussion, and we could have discussed that during open discussion, and I'm sure we will have more discussions.
So we will have about a good half hour of it at the next subcommittee meeting. Harry, a good amount of time to discuss about flat fare versus fare calculator. And one more thing, Mr. Blake, as we go order recordings, I can let you know what two trips I want to identify that are within current the last 2 weeks for the audio recording and the email. Is that correct?
Sure, yes. Well, now, was your conversation any of them calling me?
No.
I don't want Ms. Rush to hear me on the audio recording.
I just want to do one trip that's on the sedan and one that's on the van.
Oh, so you're saying you haven't taken the trips yet. You want to take a couple
of trips. I already taken the trips. I just want to identify one that was on a sedan and one recent trip that was on the van.
Well, that's good. That makes life easier for all of us. So yes. So you'll be in touch with Ms. Sharma, Ms. Anu, and then she'll coordinate it from there and reach out to the other members of the committee who are eligible to hear the audio.
Okay. That is now, my report now, because there's 2 minutes left. So go ahead, Phil. Any questions as it comes to my report? Okay, hearing none, go ahead, Phil.
Oh, very well done. And I'll take a hand from anyone or Paul if you want to finish for the last 2 minutes, and then we will adjourn the meeting. We've gotten a lot done tonight. I'm really happy. So Anu, if you see any hands or anyone that would like to speak, I'll let you give the final announcements before adjournment motion.
Oh, one tiny little piece from Mr. Blake to put a bug in his ear. I will bring up a little amendment in addition to the agenda, just to give any updates about abilities, right? Just for 5 minutes, if there's any. But do expect that from me, Mr. Blake. And I will send that amended agenda probably before this meeting is over.
No problem.
Fantastic.
All right.
Thank you. Chair Posner, we do not have anybody's hand up. It is 7:29 at this point. The bus rail subcommittee meeting will be next Monday at 4 p.m. I will share information about the RAC meeting with the committee. And it is 7:30 at this point.
Thank you, Anu. And we have completed our agenda. And according to Robert's rules, if we have completed our agenda, there are no other people wanting to talk. It is in the purview of the chair to end the meeting. And so meeting adjourned. And everybody have a safe trip home.
Thank you.
Hey, we are home. Well, for most of us, we're home.
Hey, thank you, Phil. You too.